The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
And now, it's time for Radio Jobline with your host, Scott Possessor, right here on 103.9 LI News Radio.
Welcome, everybody. It must be Saturday afternoon from 2 to 3 p.m. or Wednesday night from 8 to 9 p.m. We're here for you every week to talk about your career, various elements of the workplace, but more importantly, we focus on how to find a job, how to keep a job, how to be successful in your job. And that's what we've been doing for, I believe, 7 or 8 years here on this radio station. I'm going to have to get a date on this one of these days so I can stop saying the same years over and over again. Joining me tonight is Paige Meyer, our fabulous super intern that is soon headed for Lynchburg, Virginia to become a television broadcaster. We're very excited about for her and about the whole entire thing. And we have Doug Wall. Doug has become a friend over the years, and he's more than a resume expert. We're going to be talking about resumes tonight. And don't think you've heard everything about resumes. And don't think you know everything about resumes, because you're going to learn some new things tonight with a guy that's in the trenches every day making resumes for college graduates, executive level folks, anybody that needs a resume. And you can never know too much about a resume, Douglas. Tell us a little bit, Paige, if you would, about Mr. Doug Wald.
Of course. So Doug Wald is a director of recruiting with Executive Alliance, where he advises leading clients and talent from Fortune 100 to SMB level businesses across many industries. He's also the owner-operator of Resume Stream Media, a company that helps people at all levels in the workforce with developing their resumes, LinkedIn profiles, and interviewing skills. Doug is also a certified professional resume writer and an active speaker in the areas of career development, charitable causes, and digital marketing. When he is not working, Doug is very passionate about sports and music. Blues, rock, reggae, and jam bands are his favorite, and he attends as many performances and festivals as humanly possible.
And I can attest to that. Welcome, Douglas.
Thank you, Scott, and thank you, Paige. Thanks for the great introduction.
Doug, I think you might want to tell people, just for the fun of it, how you and I met.
I love telling the story.
Go ahead.
It's so great. Scott was kind enough to have me on the air 4 years, five, well, more than that, 6 years ago.
6 years ago.
To talk about resume practices like we are tonight. And it was nice to meet him. I knew him from his broadcasting days, News 12 Long Island and such. So brought me into the studio. We sit down like we are today, headphones at the console. We're getting ready to kick off the show. And the introductory music that you heard tonight, and we heard on that same day, was a song called Franklin's Tower from the Grateful Dead, who I am a fan of and he is a fan of. Mm-hmm. So I was sitting in Paige's chair, and as soon as I heard the introductory notes of that song, I perked up like the bloom on a rose. Mm-hmm. And I turned over to Scott and I said, and I motioned to him saying, "You like the Dead?"
Mm-hmm.
With the show being live. And he's pointing at me going, "You like the Dead?" And I'm like, "I like the Dead. You like
Love
the Dead?" So we're having this whole back and forth conversation. And that kind of started a friendship to this day. So,
I haven't forgotten that the next time you were on, you brought me a CD.
That's exactly right.
Of some your best Grateful Dead things.
Well, yeah.
Which I thought was so sweet of you to do. And I never forgot that. And I still owe you for that.
Yeah, no, thank you. And it was actually a Jerry Garcia performance. He played 15 nights on Broadway in 1987.
Wow.
And the final performance was Halloween night. I happened to be at that show. Mm. And I came in the second time Scott asked me to be on Radio Jobline. Mm. And I said, "Scott, I remember you being a fan. Here's a copy of Jerry Garcia on Broadway, 1987 Halloween night." And he flipped out, and
wow.
And we've been great buds ever since. So that's how we connected. That's how.
And then tell him what happened after that. So then how do we know each other now?
And Scott introduced me to Executive Alliance, the largest independent staffing firm on Long Island. Mm-hmm. And I said, "I'd like to get into staffing." And Scott said, "But I really don't know much about staffing. I've been a hiring manager. I worked in the software industry, things of that nature." And he said, "That's okay. I got you covered. I'll bring you in, I'll introduce you and show you the ropes." And here I am almost 6 years later, and we're working together. We work together every day, and we have a great time and a great friendship.
And Doug is one of our best recruiters, so we appreciate everything,
yeah,
Doug.
Thank you.
The meeting, the way we got to know each other,
yep.
And what you're going to do for us tonight as well. So we'll talk about resumes, Doug. Before I do, I just want to mention to the listeners, I have an article that ran in last week's Long Island Business News. It's called cover letters still count. That was the title I came up with. It was in last week's Long Island Business News. If you have not seen it, I'm going to post it this week, this coming week, on my LinkedIn account. So if you're connected with me, you're going to see it. If you don't, if you're not connected with me for some reason, I tell everyone to connect with me. By all means, write to me, scottp118@gmail.com, and I will send you the article. It's a lot, it's a sort of a forgotten art, the cover letter. What do you think, Doug?
Absolutely. I think as a supplement to, you know, your resume might speak to certain skills or certain objectives or things of that nature. But the cover letter enables you to really target that job and that function of the job. So if they could be a IT manager at X company, and on their job description, they're looking for somebody that can manage budgets or manage headcount or have certain attributes, soft skills and hard skills. So the cover letter really affords somebody the opportunity to tell that hiring manager, that recruiter, I'm interested in your job. I'm showing great interest. By the way, I serve and address the challenges you're looking for point by point. And it doesn't have to be War and Peace. It doesn't have to read like this crazy thing. But it enables the supplement for the candidate or the applicant for that role to specifically target the challenges that a hiring manager is looking for. So it'll show your profile for the resume, but really it's a great vehicle to be able to address those specific points called out in the job description that can address those challenges. And that's what a hiring manager is looking for. That's what recruiters are looking for.
And what I did, Doug, is I pretended I was a recruiter when I wrote the article.
Interesting.
And I said, what would I want to see?
Right.
And I forced everyone that's going to read this article to do it in the first sentence.
Yes.
My extensive background as a biotechnology salesperson should be of interest to your company's open role for us, for a blankety blank account exec,
right?
And that immediately captures the attention. What you don't want to say is, attached is my resume.
Right.
Because that you might as well just put that
you're
in the email.
You're punting people away.
You're just punting people away. Yeah, so we'll get more to that maybe toward the end of the conversation. We can pick that up. But let's talk about resumes. And that's another thing I feel very strongly about, Doug, because I wonder where people get the ability and the knowledge and the skills to actually say, I can do your resume. I mean, a lot of wives do their husbands' resumes.
Right.
And, you know, these are not professionally trained people that know how to do it.
Right.
So what do you think? I mean, how do you find a resume writer? How do you choose somebody?
They're out there. I mean, there's a number of people in either HR functions or career coaching functions or recruiters or things of that nature. So there's a number of people that understand that the practice and the need and how to transpose those particular skills or things where it's digestible, it's accessible, it's clean, it's not, you know, word salad. It's, you know, so there are people, and there are people in a marketing capacity that know how to write, but writing for a resume is more of a science. You know, I always like to equate it as the tail wags the dog, meaning the tail is the client or is the job description, and you have to write to it. And it's not about you necessarily. You can make it contextual about what you bring to the table, but it's about them. How do you address the client's needs? How do you address the primary points in that job description to show you address the challenges and you play well with others, you communicate well, you manage budgets or whatever they're looking for. So it is a science, you know, it is a science and it's an understanding. So it does take time to be able to refine it and be succinct and not be, you know, too complex in your language. You know, we like seeing clean resumes that are written with authority, written with good tone, and also tell me who you are, not just what you've done. Mm. Like, I want to see, you know, are you a good community person? Do you volunteer? Do you, you know, do you manage teams? Do you guide teams? Do you coach teams? Are you, you know, a manager that, you know, directs down rather than collaboratively across the board? So the language and the tone and speaking to who you are really makes a difference. And it's something that I can tell to a client or I can advise somebody else to say, hey, here's Joe. Joe not only has done these things and has achieved these things and performed well in these areas, but Joe's a good guy and Joe's collaborative and Joe can, you know, do these things. So I like telling that story when I socialize an applicant to a particular client that we're working with. So, and Scott and I do this quite frequently. So it's developing that balance. It's developing the tactical balance of, you know, who are you and what do you do? But why are you important for that role? Why do you feel you're going to target that role really well?
So I was way back in seventh grade, which was 400 years ago, okay? but I took a speech course, right. And I remembered, tell them what you're going to tell them, and tell them what you told them. that stuck in my head. And all these years later, one of the few things I can remember is that expression. So that was what I was getting at with the cover letter. Get it right out there. What in that first sentence capture my attention. Right. I believe the same thing happens with a resume. You can't start out with an off the mark summary at the top. It's got to be right on target. You can't. What about Doug? There are people that use the same resume for every eventuality. The same resume. They don't change.
That was going to be my next question for you. Do you recommend that people tailor their resume for the job that they're applying
2,000%.
Yes.
Wow.
They have to. And they I would double that.
Yeah. No, they have to. And Paige, the reason is, again, it's about the target, right?
Yeah.
People have a certain inward expectation of what they do and who they are.
Mm-hmm.
But unless they're telling, it's basically marketing too. Mm-hmm. If you're sending an email to a certain audience or, you know, you're doing a campaign or advertising or whatever, you know, you want to tell the audience what they want to hear, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you make it contextual? How do you talk about, you know, at the macro level, the type of industries, their industry, the type of function, their function, or that function you're mm-hmm. targeting, things of that nature. Then, you know, more broadly, you can speak to, okay, I was a salesperson in financial services selling for Fortune 100 companies, selling annuities or selling these types of programs or practices. So you got to tell people what they need to hear.
Mm-hmm.
But make it contextual and make it accessible, make it clean and make it blend. And that's the best way where they'll get identity from, you know, we see these things in our sleep.
Yeah.
You know, so what's going to get my attention? You know, you got to tell me what I got to hear from my client who I'm representing. So it's about the target. And like Scott said, the top third of the resume is critical.
Yeah.
You got to make,
let's talk about that uppermost portion, that summary. Nobody uses objectives anymore. And when I see one, I tell people to take it off,
mm-hmm.
you know, use a summary. And I ask them to pull from the job description, you know, what are the 9 things that a company is actually saying, we need this,
mm-hmm.
okay? So let's say you have 6 of those things, which is pretty good. So that's what goes in your summary at the top.
That's exactly right.
Those 6 things.
That's exactly right.
And not what you've had again and again and again, the same thing over and over again. So I have a candidate, Doug, that's a quality assurance person in manufacturing. But she starts out her resume with such and such biotechnology executive with 10 years experience as a chemist. Now, she was a chemist earlier in her career, but she's doing quality assurance now. So I said to her, Doug, I get so frustrated by this. I said, does it make any sense to you to start out by saying you're a chemist? The company is looking for a quality assurance. Why start that way? And yet, nobody gets it, Doug. Unless we help them,
right.
They don't get it.
Right, and people don't know what they don't know, and we've learned this over mm-hmm. time. You know, when I work with an executive or a college student, and try and emphasize that point out of the gate, you're targeting exactly that role. That should be the exact title of what you're targeting, and then the other, you know, 8 to 10 things that they're seeing in the job description should be in that top part of the resume. So people generally don't understand what they don't know. And they're seeing it inward. They're thinking, okay, I am this. And she may be seeing that she's been a chemist at a good part of her career and sees herself as a chemist, but doesn't equate it to what the target is to be a QA person. So, you know, it takes practice and it takes understanding. But, you know, again, I say towel wags the dog all the time because it's about the target.
But I just think there's a malaise that people are lazy, Doug. I think they don't want to sculpt their experience, you know, directly for the target that we're shooting at, right? They don't want to do it. They
want to do easy apply on LinkedIn. 1,
yeah.
2, 3.
Easy down. Apply.
Yep.
Easy
right.
apply.
Which, and you raise a great point, Paige, because there's 2 attributes to Scott. You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. I think people just want to get it done and they see it as an arduous task, right? They see job up and it is an arduous task. I completely get it. But for the best practice of tailoring your resume to each application and making sure that top third is completely targeted, it's completely worth it, number one. Number two, to Paige's point about easy apply on LinkedIn and Indeed and how these platforms have made it easier for candidates to apply, people spray and pray. They hit apply, apply, apply. And I will say, no, and it's God's honest truth. And Scott can say this as well. You know, more. I will say roughly 80% of the applications that I get for my jobs are irrelevant to the role. I have, you know, I'll have a chief financial officer job out there. and I'll get dog walkers applying for that job. Not that there's anything wrong with walking the dog. I like walking the dog. I'm cool with dogs, right? But you're not a chief financial officer for a vegan cosmetics company in Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, it's worth the extra time. It's not a lot of time. You don't have to spend a ton of time on tailoring the resume, making sure, and then people get frustrated and go, well, I applied to all these companies and I'm not hearing back. That's why you're not hearing back. Mm-hmm. You're not doing the due diligence to be able to target that message, and you're not reading the description, and you're just apply, and just spraying and praying everything. And people say, well, I applied to 300 jobs all over the place. There was an article in Florida, I don't know if you saw this recently, a retail services level guy applied to 60 jobs. He got one call back.
I did see that. That was today.
That was today. Yeah. Correct. Well, he got one call back, but I'll bet dollars to donuts and frappuccinos, okay, that did he target his resume to those 60 jobs?
Guaranteed he didn't.
He didn't, right? And he didn't know what he didn't know, and that's okay. But that's why we, as advocates for careers, try and help people with that particular practice. But it should be pretty inherent. You know, it should be something you understand that if you're trying to speak a language, you know, if you're speaking Swedish to somebody speaking Swedish, and then you start hitting them with a completely different language, they're not going to understand. So it's mm-hmm. you know, obviously a micro version of that, but it's about identity. It's about understanding and being able to craft your message easily to say, okay, you're looking for these six things. I am those six things, and this is why. And then quantifying where you move the needle on revenue or process. And that's where we talk about performance highlights and bullet items that support your narrative.
We're going to get into that. But when you're sitting down to send a resume to a company, this is not a quick thing.
Right.
There's nothing fast about it. You have to think it through. What do I have from the list of wants that they're saying? How do I integrate that into the resume? How do I sprinkle it through the rest of the content in addition to the summary? It's a big job. Every time, I would rather see a candidate that's unemployed and working full-time at getting a job go after four companies a day than 40. Because I think they're going to do a better job, mm-hmm. especially if they job hunt the way we advocate here on Radio Jobline, which is to use LinkedIn to get people that work at the company,
right,
and then get them to talk to you and give you the inside track and maybe walk your resume in. So the resume's got to make sense, Doug. You can't just use the same. And one more thing that bothers me, and then we can move on. Suddenly, people don't put their addresses on the resume.
Yes.
Now, this bothers me for one particular reason. I have to upload all of my candidates into an applicant tracking system. And that applicant tracking system is non-negotiable. I need the candidate's address.
Right?
Why? I don't know. I don't know why it's so important, but it is. Now, those people, there are a lot of people out there, Doug, that say, well, I don't want to put my resume, my address, people might find out where I live, or some ridiculous statement like that. Right. Well, anybody can find you. Anybody can find anybody at any time, right, day or night. Right. So in any country. So what are they rescuing? What are they solving by not putting their address on a resume?
Right.
I personally think if you're a local person and the job is in Smithtown and you live in Comac, which is damn close, I would put my address on there.
Right.
What do you think?
Well, absolutely. I think, you know, there is the, you know, in our day and age about privacy and things of that nature. And I do understand that to that degree, but they don't see the process. They're thinking, especially in the local market. So, you know, if I have a job in New York and it says the job sits in New York and somebody from, you know, Anchorage, Alaska applies to that job, I'm not looking at that person, mm-hmm. because you get in a relocation cost and possibilities there, and it's more mm-hmm. of an expense to the client. And the client says, so I'd rather see somebody from New York. So it doesn't even have to be your full address, and they can provide that on the application process, but, you know, provide your general town and state of where you live in. That's it. You know, so if it's going to be local to the market, because that's, again, going to be advantageous to people in that market rather than people that might be out of there. But, you know, that's where the cover letter comes in and says, okay, yes, I'm in Anchorage, Alaska. I see the jobs in New York. My family lives in New York, and I'm moving to New York in April or whatever it is. So
right.
for that supplementary information. But you know, at the very least, it should be, you know, certainly included at the top part of your resume, so it's easy, because a lot of times, you know, from administrative reasons, we have to go back to the client and say, okay, or the candidate and ask them, you know, where do you live? What are your addresses? And they have to understand the expectation of it. I mean, you're going to surrender the address anyway. You're going to, you know, once you onboard to a company, your paycheck has to go somewhere if it's not direct deposit or whatever, you know, so people have to know, you know, that practice. So,
but if your resume, if your address is not on the resume, it's like you're trying to hide it.
Right.
Right. So right away, maybe that guy, Doug, is from Anchorage, Alaska,
right,
but he doesn't want me to know that, because then I won't take him seriously. And he's right.
Right.
He's absolutely right.
Yep.
If you're applying for a job from Anchorage, Alaska to here on Long Island, you got a problem. Right. You know, that's a big tree location. Right. And we're going to look at local candidates a lot faster. I mean, Doug, use the mind of the staffing. We only have 30 seconds, but use the mind of a staffing guy. You don't look at people out of town.
Right. Unless you have to, or it depends upon how thick a talent pool may or may not be in that particular geography or things like that. But by and large, you're right. I mean, you're going to look for people in the local market, period.
All right. So if you don't put your address on, you're shooting yourself in the foot in a couple of ways. One, you're not really hiding yourself. Number two, you're not giving me the information that I need to decide if you'd be a great candidate for this role. And three, there's something mysterious about it, right. Like you're trying to hide something.
Right.
All bad reasons.
Agreed.
So I get people argue with me about this all the time.
Right.
Oh, it's wrong. I'm not putting it on. You're wrong. You know, just, you know, I don't even want to get into it. But anyway, you're listening to Radio Jobline with Scott Possessor and Paige Meyer. And we have with us Doug Wald, a fabulous resume expert and staffing expert, joining us on the show today. You'll learn more from a show like this, folks, than you will most of the time, because we really do help people get jobs. And that's what the show is all about. If you have an idea for Radio Jobline, you can write to me, scottp118@gmail.com. scottp118@gmail.com, and I'll be happy to have you or your idea on the show. We have a news break coming up. Stay with us. Roll away.
And now, welcome back to Radio Jobline with your host, Scott Possessor, right here on LI News Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Radio Jobline. Thank you so much for tuning in today. For next week, we have a great show planned on Women Empowering Women. We have someone way across the pond calling in to be with us. Also, if you're from the nonprofit world, we'll have Tammy Severino, the president and CEO for Girl Scouts of America, calling in as well. And just to get back to business before we welcome back Doug, going after the customer of tomorrow, Biz Shout. Socially promote yourself or your business is a next generation platform for promoting and advertising that offers people and brands a new business casual culture. This new collaboration will feature maximizing content across several platforms with the freedom to reach and stretch conversations, careers, and prosperity through unique shouts. For their first add-on service, they designed a creative resume to help job seekers potentially land their dream job 5 times greater. This is achieved by showcasing elevator pitches on chemistry, job-related demonstration videos, and blogging to further prove their value. Additionally, candidates can be discovered in a targeted database for free. Joining BizShout and designing a creative resume are also free at BizShout.com, spelt with 2 Z's. Build one today to land your dream job.
And a little shout out to Charlie Lee, our buddy, who's the CEO of BizShout. And I just got a video from him. They're making some wholesale changes to the way the website works the way it looks. Everything has changed. I haven't had a chance to watch the whole video yet. It's very long because there's a lot going on there. But, you know, Doug, we have this company and we read their commercial every week because we're scared to death that they're going to become the next Facebook. Okay? And if they do... They, you know, they'll be our friends,
yeah,
right? And then we're in with them.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, that's the story. Doug, I think we covered some good ground in the first segment, and you have a thing that you mentioned before the show started. Here in your notes, tell them who you are, not just what you do. I know you said it already, but let's spend some more time on this.
Sure. You know, one thing you want to hear about a candidate or an applicant. Especially now where culture is so important to companies, progression is so important to companies, collaboration and things of that nature with, you know, just making sure a company, they get it. They, you know, collaborative companies and good companies with good culture are the ones that really progress in the market. So that's what people are looking for. So not only tell people, you know, what you've done and what you've accomplished, but, you know, are you a good collaborator? Are you a good communicator? Do you project manage well? Do you play well in the sandbox with others? Mm-hmm. Do you move the needle on projects, on revenue, on initiatives, you know, where do you make impact and how do you accentuate those soft skills around communication, collaboration, those types of things that make you an attractive candidate. It's not about just what you've done. And I've had heads of HR, I've had, you know, senior executives or executive level people
come back to me on a resume and saying, you know, I like what you did here because I see this person as who they are, not just what they've done. It paints a picture. And that's a picture that sometimes recruiters have to sell to hiring managers or advocate to hiring managers saying, all right, here's Joe. Joe's a great salesperson, but not only that, he volunteers here. He does this. He's collaborative. He does a lot of these things that kind of centers the personality profile of that candidate. So I can't say enough about advocating your soft skills, talking about those things, especially to college students right now that might not have a lot of work experience or not have internships or things of that nature. Speak to your courseware, speak to volunteer things that you've done or different associations you're part of or standards bodies you're part of or things of that show, you know, that you're committed to your community or committed to certain things that are going to be of importance to you. So I think that's an important attribute to add to a resume.
All right. So one of the things that bothers me, though, Doug, is that people say anybody can say that. Anybody can say I'm collaborative, I learn fast, I do all these things, I'm resourceful, I project manage well, I play well in the sandbox. How do you know if you're getting the truth? So doesn't everybody kind of say those types of things?
Well, they do. I think that's part of the conversation phase, you know, where you can determine energy from people. That's another thing. You know, when somebody's on the phone with you and they're a wallflower and their one-word answers and wah, 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 wah. Right? Versus tone and energy and perspective and things of that nature. So you kind of can extract that out of a conversation or get that first impression out of, you know, like they say, you can't get a second impression, you know, after getting the first one. So I think, you know, so you can learn and maybe drill into some of those aspects. Say, okay, you're a great project manager. Can you tell me where you managed an escalation or manage a huge headcount or managed where did you move the needle on a big program and got it over the cliff? How do you manage, you know, multiple characters and multiple stakeholders and those types of things? So there's ways to find out and discern, are they a good project manager based on some of the questions and based on some of the qualifications and their energy and their tone and how are they collaborating and how do they communicate those particular, you know, instances and wins for you? So,
yeah, I mean, if you think about the last 20 or 30 years, how much the word project management has become part of the lexicon of where we are
today.
Without
a doubt.
Okay. I mean, in the old days, it meant something specific, and it usually was IT related.
Right.
Right? And then it got across the enterprise. It got started. Everyone was using it. And I've been thinking about myself, Doug. I manage projects.
Sure you do.
You know, when we did our website, when I write, you know, for something editorial for the company, it's a project. I have to get approval. I got to get buy-in from everybody. Mm-hmm. I got to get a final draft of it. I've got to circulate it, and it's not over. It's never over.
You manage timelines, right? You manage escalations. Right. You manage responses. Yeah,
it's like we have to do our Christmas cards.
Right, right.
Okay. So that doesn't sound like much. It doesn't sound like much, but we have to put a database together. We have to make sure we have the proper database. We have to come up with the content. We have to come up with the design. Mm-hmm. We've got to put all of that in the hands of our marketing person, who's really our social media person, mm-hmm. that's going to post it all. So it's a project. And I find that I've developed this skill, and I'm glad that I did. Sure. And I wish I had time, because I would get a PMP.
Right.
If anybody cared, sure. Right? I mean, sure. I'm at my age, who cares if I have a PMP?
Well, if you're headed that direction and you want to become a project manager, you need a PMP.
Yeah.
You know, they require it.
I think it's one of the most valuable certifications that a person can get without having to go through 4 years of school.
That's
or
exactly
even 2 years of school. What is it? It's like 6 months, right? To get a
PMP. That's about right. Yeah.
You know, so we have a great organization along the project. What's it? Do you remember?
The PMP of Long Island.
PMP of Long Island.
And they're a great organization.
Great organization.
And been part of that too. So
yes. So great thing to have. Great thing. And it would right at the top of the resume, Doug Wald, PMP.
Right.
You know, and right away you're starting with something.
Yep.
You know, so strong. Okay. And Doug, Paige already took care of the question, is it important to update your resume for each job? So we know now the answer is an emphatic yes. But let's talk about some of the mistakes. People make mistakes on resumes and then they deny the mistake.
Right.
So it's kind of like, no, the entire English language is wrong and this is right. So I remember I was giving a talk at Delphi, my buddy Neil Halloran, who runs the internship program there, and I was talking to some students, and I boldly said, is there any student in this room? First thing I asked them, was there any student in this room that reads a newspaper? And nobody's hand went up. Mm. So that's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Always, what did you read? What are you reading? This is becoming a very important question. Mm-hmm. But I said, is there anybody here brave enough to give me their resume? And I'll guarantee I'll find a mistake. And sure enough, this very, you know, confident young man, you know, 6 feet tall, attractive, like a football player and a scholar at the same time, gives me his resume, and I find a mistake in the opening sentence.
Sure he did.
Opening sentence.
Was he so embarrassed?
He was so embarrassed. But people don't pay. They don't pay attention. They don't. You need, if you have a sentence, you need a period. Mm-hmm. You don't just have a full and complete sentence without a period. Now, if you have a phrase, you know, or some things that you're listing, you don't need any punctuation. But if you have a full sentence, you need a period. So, and his first opening sentence was, he's seeking so-and-so, it's a full, and no period. So I said, well, let's get an English teacher in here. That's wrong. So the mistakes can be minor, but they start adding up. Right. So as I'm reading a resume, Doug, and you do this too, I'm starting to say, well, that's one, that's two, that's three, you know, and a person with four mistakes on their resume, how do you look at that person?
Well, it also depends upon the role. I mean, I work at a lot of marketing roles. I represent one of the top advertising agencies in the area, and they're verboten. You cannot, I've seen people send thank you emails, do the interview, they love the candidate, send a thank you email to the client going, thank you so-and-so for the interview, it was really nice to meet you, and on the thank you email, and they get bounced.
Yep.
On a thank you email.
Yep.
So, and Scott's an advocate, we know, we've talked about this in the past. Yeah. I asked to review every thank you email, any correspondence going back to a client. I don't care what it is, I don't care what level it is, I have to see it first. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people might be too presumptuous and say, oh, well, when I take that job and you place me in that job after the first interview, I will do da-da-da. Whoa, slow your roll, bro. Like, okay, so I'll tell people, you know, so it's important not only to have the proper, you know, language and etiquette and things like that, but if it's an editorial role, it's a digital marketing role, you're presenting to clients, you're, you know, putting out multi-million dollar campaigns, you know, you have to have it down. You know?
So if you're a digital marketing guy,
yeah,
and you write a follow-up note, and the follow-up note says, dear Doug, thank you.
Yeah. You're out.
You're out.
You're out.
That's it.
You're out. You have to be able to carry. Because, I mean, I can coach somebody and say, well, no, you need to fix this, this, and this. But they're going to the client. You know, they're going to. So if they place them in work and they're like, thank ooh, then, you know, they look at me and go, well, where'd this guy come from? You know, or
but how do you leave the why off, Doug? This is the thing that gets me so much, is people just don't have the attention to detail that's required. Now, look, it could be a computer guy. So he doesn't write well. True. And maybe English is not even his first language.
That's exactly right.
It could be a second or third language.
Right.
So, and I always admire them because they're able to speak English so well. It's a very complicated language compared to other languages. Sure. But you've got to have it right. There's no excuse, Doug.
Right.
There's no crying and job hunting.
Right, that's exactly right.
You can't make a mistake.
That's exactly right. And there is leeway for some of those other industries or other functions. If it's a technology function where, you know, again, it's not their proficiency in certain things, but in general communication, in general business, in marketing and roles like that, you have to be buttoned down because, you know, it's going to carry through. If that's a responsibility, if editorial is some level of responsibility in that role, whether you're presenting to clients, whatever you're doing. So if you're not buttoned down, and the thing is, we have spell check now, like, you know, write your spell check.
And I feel the resume process is you're supposed to be putting your best self out there.
That's
your
exactly
best
right.
foot forward. So if that is your best work, that email that you're sending with the mistake, like, you should check that over three times or have a friend review it or, you know, and that you're sending that out to your future employer and they say, this is our first interaction, as you got this email wrong, next.
That's exactly
Thank
right.
Thank you, next.
That's exactly right. And I see it in the market. So, you know, due diligence and quality, you can't say enough about it, and making sure. And if you need to bounce it off of other people that might be more, you know, savvy in that world or editorial capable or whatever, I would recommend that.
You need a resume buddy. At the very least, you need a resume buddy. Someone that's going to look, give you a second set of eyes, even if they can't afford a resume writer or any kind of professional assistance, get someone to look at it.
Yep.
Get someone else's perspective. And you'll see that between the two of you, you'll be able to improve it.
Exactly.
You know, so that's critical. But the mistakes that people make are unforgivable and laughable and can cost them. Look at the difference between my perception of a candidate for a $200,000 job, okay? That gives me an error on the resume. He doesn't get it, the $200,000 interview. Mm-hmm. That's a life-changing event, okay? All because he wasn't careful enough on his resume.
Right. And one thing to extend to that, people forget that a resume is the most important financial document you will own in your lifetime. Period. End of story. Yeah. And there's a period at the end of that, so I got that. So, but people forget that. They figure it's an arduous process, and it's something that's, you know, kind of like pulling teeth to some people, but it is the most financially important document you will own in your lifetime.
Yeah, I'm still thinking about verboten. So verboten. We got a little German here in the booth tonight. All right. So, Doug, more common mistakes.
I think one, we kind of spoke about this earlier, about performance highlights. Mm-hmm. And certainly it's applicable in some functions more than others. If you're a salesperson and you sell coconuts, okay? Did you sell 10,000 coconuts in a month and drive revenue or drive pipeline for your coconut company? Mm-hmm. You can't say enough about performance highlights. And it can't be, you know, Scott's the greatest coconut salesperson in the world. Mm-hmm. Scott's the greatest coconut salesperson in the world because he sold 10,000 coconuts a month and made $1 million in revenue for that company. Anything where you can move the needle on revenue or process, speak to those. You know, I usually look for 3 or 4 performance bullets that show, okay, I'm Scott, hear me roar. Here's my top third resume summary of qualifications that speak to hard and soft skills directed at that job description. Underneath that should have your skills. Underneath that should be performance highlights, ROI highlights. Scott also manages budgets of X. He's managed sales of Y. Mm-hmm. He's managed headcount of however many people. Mm-hmm. So show tangible, actual performance highlights that show you move the needle on process or revenue. And that's a differentiator that really supplements the narrative. And it shows that you're actionable and you get things done and you do it in a quantifiable manner.
I remember when I did my own resume, Doug, I had 3 little columns right under my summary. So it was like 3 bullets, mm-hmm. 3 bullets, 3 bullets. Mm-hmm. And I used to take, of the 9, mm-hmm. I would only put in the ones that were relevant right. to the job that I was going after.
That's exactly right.
And because it was created like a modular piece where that piece was interchangeable, mm-hmm. I would pluck out the summary, put in a different summary, mm-hmm. pluck out 6 of the 9 things that mm-hmm. I had there mm-hmm. and replace them with 6 more relevant things. And all of this, Doug, before I got into the content of the resume.
That's
it was
exactly
very
right.
strategic and very well thought out. And that's how I got into this
whole
resume.
And those bullets,
business.
Scott, are a critical real estate. Think of the landscape of the resume. Mm-hmm. The introduction, who I am Scott, hear me roar, okay? Mm-hmm. Then those bullets, to your point, you can interchange those that are directly relevant to the core keywords from the description of that role or the requirements of that role. So that way they're seeing this person is in my industry, is in my segment, does the things I'm looking for out of that job description. And oh, by the way, here are 9 things or 12 things or 16 things that are directly, again, skills that are relevant. So the top third of the resume is called out basically of your job description where they have to pick up the phone. They have to reach out
so
to
So, Doug, if we don't catch them in that first third, do we lose them?
You kind of do. I mean, you would have to go into the experience to see those things. But, I mean, you're presenting your best foot forward, to Paige's point. You're presenting those types of things up front. So, so do you lose them? Not necessarily. It takes a little more time. I mean, you know, recruiters and hiring managers and HR folks, they're under the gun. They're seeing resumes in their sleep. It's like a fire hose of resumes coming at them. So unless you're telling them the story that they need to hear and showing the requirements that you meet for that role, you know, you might lose them. So if it takes 3 seconds or 3 minutes, if it's 3 minutes and you start to glaze over and you're like, all right, does this person really match what I'm looking for, or the needs of my client or the company? You might lose them. I mean, you know, but you know, you put yourself at a disadvantage if you're not calling those things out up front.
Yeah. And so, okay. So we got to do that.
Yep.
And then, as far as mistakes, you're saying that not to include your highlights and accomplishments and performance is a mistake, right?
Yes.
And then, but there are other, like, you know, sillier mistakes too, like having 2 lines on page 2.
Right.
You couldn't figure out a way to get it on page 1.
Nip it and tuck it and move it up.
I mean,
yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
I can see that's something I would hold against the candidate,
right.
because why should I have to look at page 2 and start wondering, is this everything?
Right.
Is there more to page 2 than
right.
just these 2 lines?
Right.
You know, how much word processing skill does it take to get it or get it on 2 pages?
Right.
If it's on 2 pages, fine.
Right.
There's no limitation to pages, right?
That's exactly right. I mean, the best practice usually is roughly 3 pages. You always hear about the 1-page fallacy. All resumes have to be 1 page. Like Elon Musk has a 1-page resume. Well, he's Elon Musk, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
He's okay to have a 1-page resume.
Mm-hmm.
Is he applying for jobs? No.
No.
You know, so there's that fallacy. So, you know, it's about the keywords. It's about, you know, and it's doesn't have to be like War and Peace. It doesn't have to be. It has to be clean, accessible, and direct. Period. Mm-hmm. So if it's going to go to three, you know, especially people more senior in their careers or advanced in their careers, that's okay to have a three-page resume. So college student might want to have one, and that's okay. Mm. It's really, you know, contingent on the level of experience, the level of skills, and other secondary things around associations, standard bodies, volunteer work, other things that are going to be, you know, again, tell you who you are and those types of things. So,
yeah, and another thing that as we're talking about this, the spacing is the sometimes people to be out of their desperation not to go to three pages, they'll use print so small you can't read it. That's you need a magnifying glass. Right. And what are you accomplishing there?
Well, you know, again, people don't know what they don't know. You want it to be accessible. You want it to be clean. You want to be able to read it. Mm-hmm. So if it's too small because they're trying to cram everything in, doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Now, Doug, I want you to do something. Give people a way to reach you if they're interested in using your services or want to get more information. Is there a website? Is there a phone number? Is there
sure.
Whatever you got?
Well, my website is resumestream.net. My email address is douglaswald65@gmail.com. And my phone number is 631-664-0983.
Can you do this remotely? Does it
sure
does
can.
The person have to be with you?
Nope, not at all.
Okay. All right, great.
Thank you.
All right, so we have 1 minute left, okay? And what advice would you give to people, Doug, just starting out, who have never done a resume before?
Do the due diligence. You know, do this. Look at the job descriptions. Figure out who you want to be. Because a lot of people will say, I don't want to be this and I don't want to be that. It's like, okay, find the job or the career that you want, that you feel you can achieve. But also take the due diligence and do the work to read the job descriptions, check the market, feel where you have those soft skills and hard skills that you can apply to those jobs. And being able to tailor your resume and your message, whether it's a cover letter, your LinkedIn profile, make sure that you're putting things into the zone that you feel you're going to be fluent in and proficient in. So, but that it's always that soul searching conversation we have to have with ourselves. Who do I want to be next? What do I want to be? Where do I want to do it?
All right.
So it takes that kind of time.
And if you're using the same resume every time, you better go talk to Doug. Okay, that's all I got to say.
Yep.
We're out of time here on Radio Jobline. Thank you for being with us this evening. I want to thank Douglas Wald for taking his very valuable time.
Thanks,
being
Scott.
With us,
really Doug. Appreciate being here.
We'll
great.
Do it again real soon.
A lot of fun.
And we're looking forward to next week's show. As we said, we're going to have the Girl Scouts with Jobs. Jobs working for the Girl Scouts. So tune in next week. And we also have a wonderful lady, Jane Finette from England, who's going to talk to us about women empowering women. Have a great week, everybody. Happy hunting. Roll
away. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.